You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 70. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation from all across the globe. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. Today in the show, we are featuring a conversation with Alex Oliveira from the Center for Biological Diversity. Alex has been doing research on several of the government programs associated with the conservation of the vaquita in the northern Gulf of California, and he has uncovered some disturbing information. The primary focus of Alex's recent investigations has been the government compensation program associated with the ban on the use of gillnets within the range of the vaquita. This program was supposedly designed to fairly compensate fishermen who are now unable to fish because of the regional ban on gillnet use. Alex has found numerous signs of corruption within this program, leading to many questions about the Mexican government's true intentions. This interview was conducted by WildLens producer Sean Bogle in Ensenada, Mexico. Both Sean and Alex traveled to Ensenada last week to attend the 7th annual meeting of the International Committee for the Recovery of the Vaquita, where Alex presented his findings to the world's top vaquita experts. Let's jump into the conversation.
I am Alejandro Oliveira, Mexico's representative for the Center for Biological Diversity. We are here attending the CIRBA meeting because we are providing some new information that some of the CIRBA members don't have. So this is because we have been researching and we have digging and going into the details of several strategies announced by the Mexican government. For example, we have been doing some research about the surveillance, about the drones that the PROFEPA Mexican agency will use, and about the compensation program, how all this money is being distributed along the fishermen. So
as far as your role is, tell me a little bit about the Center for Biological Diversity and what exactly is that agency, what do they do exactly?
Well, the Center for Biological Diversity, we are a non-profit, an NGO. We are mainly in the U.S. and we are also in Mexico. And our job is to advocate for wildlife and its habitats using, of course, science-based, using the legislation to save these creatures in natural and their habitats. And in Mexico, we have been advocating for the vaquita, not only in the legal side, but also going through the media and exposing what really is going on all around the Mexico's government strategies.
What have you come up with that you're able to contribute now to this new effort to save the vaquita?
Yeah, we have found some failures in the Mexican strategy, Mexican government strategy to save the vaquita. For example, we found out that Semarnat approved a permit to fish 28 species in the Upper Gulf using fishing gear that could affect the vaquita. No? Those kind of things, we are always tracking all Semarnat's, all PROFEPA, Navy, and other Mexican agencies. We're tracking or digging into their actions. So that's what also regarding the surveillance, for example, sometimes the agencies said they will use, they say they will use drones to surveillance the upper goals. But when we requested this information through the Freedom of Information Act, we discovered that the Navy is really, they are not really using any drones. They don't own any drone to surveillance the upper Gulf, as they said. And also PROFEPA, they didn't bought any drones. They received three drones as a donation And we're talking about these really amateur drones that they are not being used, actually. And also regarding this big compensation program, we found out that it is being distributed in an unequal way, because like 30 people, we have a total of 2,700, and only 30 people are getting around like 42% of all the money. So the money is being concentrated in just a small amount of people, and this is because they hold a lot of permits. So scientists in Silva didn't know this kind of information, so it is our job to provide this, so they can take better decisions and state better recommendations to the Mexican government.
Okay, so let's back up just a little bit. So specifically, the Mexican government, including Paquiano, they made several statements that they were going to be, you know, that they're going to use enforcement, the Navy and the Army, and in addition, of course, I've been there, I've also heard that they were going to use drones. And you're telling me that the drones that they have are amateur drones. Can you tell me exactly how you were able to obtain that information? And when you say amateur drones, what exactly does that mean? Is it, we're talking military grade? Are we talking more of a commercial hobbyist type of drone?
All the information we have, it's official, because we requested it through the Freedom of Information Act. So it is, those are documents from the Mexican government. So that's how we found out when we requested the bills for the drones. Profepa answered that they don't have any bills because the drones were donated. And they sent us the model and the brand of the drones. And if you look at this, you can know that the drones are the ones that you can buy on any website. And we're talking about really amateur drones. These drones that they don't have more than, they cannot fly more than 15 or 20 minutes, and the range is very restricted.
So essentially this is something that a teenager would be using.
Exactly, even a teenager could use this kind of drones. But if you read the press release from Semarnat and Profepa, you can interpret that they will use these high-tech drones.
And can you remind our audience, in case they, some of them are not going to know this, but can you tell me exactly who Profepa and Semarnat are? Like, what role do they play?
Well, Semarnat is the Ministry of Environment. And below Semarnat, there is another agency named Profepa. In Profepa, it is an enforcement agency related to all environmental felonies.
Tell me, why do you think the government actually would make a statement saying they were going to use drones to kind of present that they were going to do everything that they can, and then these findings that you have right now are completely ludicrous and do not match up with a strong statement like that? Why would they say something like that?
Yeah, well, we always, we usually don't believe what the government says, so we have to make a really good research about what's going on. So because this is not the first time that the government lies, even on a press release, so that's part of our job, I mean, to find out what's really going on and what they want to, what they really say, and what the kind of drones they are buying in this case.
And when you say we, who are you referring to?
We, the center. The Center for Biological Diversity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, moving on past that, when do you think that whenever, you know, these new findings of the compensation program, the fact that we've been collecting our own evidence by through interviews, we've seen and understood what you found to be true, but you actually found the evidence that everything we've been hearing is true. I just wanted to know, when they're developing this program, like they're having to build this competition program because they know that they're okay. bad fishing. So are they anticipating something like this? And is there somebody watching this every step of the way? Because this is, I'm assuming, is this taxpayer money?
Yeah, this is. We're talking about taxpayers' money, and there are different agencies in the government. So when the compensation program started, it was under the Ministry of Development. So because it was like an aid for the fishermen, like a social aid for them. So our thoughts as it's that another agency in the government, like Semarnat, didn't know about all the details of this compensation program. So it's easy to think that, well, we have this amount of money, and we are paying to the fishermen for not to fish, and that's it. Before they stop, and it's all on the hands of other agency. So nobody goes into the details how the money is being distributed, and how are these lists are being made. I mean, who is not on the list? Who is really in the list? Who depends on? Who relies really on the fisheries? How much money really this person deserves? How many fishing permits they have? So they just have this basic ideas of how to distribute the money, and they just do it.
So it sounds like it's not a well thought out plan.
Exactly.
It's almost like they started and they didn't finish the process.
Exactly. It is not a well thought plan. So that's why.
Okay. So let's talk specifics now. So on this list of people that are supposed to be receiving compensation, how many individuals are supposed to be receiving compensation during this gillnet ban?
There is a total of 2,700 people on the list that they are receiving money because they depend directly on the fishing, because they do all related all fishing activities, and there is also people that relate on the industry that also depend indirectly from the fishery industry. So we have different amounts that in the lower chain they are receiving. There are people that are receiving like 4,000 pesos
per month.
And we have people, there's a person that it's being paid more than 1,000,000 pesos a month.
And what kind of person would this be? Is this your average fisherman or?
No, these persons are mainly the head of a big fisherman cooperative or big fisherman union. So they hold several permits. And so they get paid for each permit they have. So that's why they have a lot of income. So the question here is how did they get so many permits in the past years for one person?
Is that appropriate? It seems like a giant red flag when you tell me that one person is getting 1,000,000 pesos. It seems like somebody would look into that. Is that not?
Well, that's not appropriate, of course. That's unfair for everybody. I mean, only a few people are concentrating almost half of the money that the government is being invested. So that's totally unfair.
So, okay, let me ask you this. So 2,700, is that, how many of the 2,700 are actually receiving payment? Are all 2,700?
Yeah, I mean, all the 2,700 persons are receiving this payment. The total estimation of people who depend on the fisheries, it's really unknown. I mean, the government doesn't have this information. Could be more than this 2,700, could be less. So there is so many people on the list that the fishermen leaders, they erase people and then they add people each month. So this list is also, it keeps changing month per month. So this makes things like really complicated because there's a lot of people and there's a lot of money, and everybody wants a big part of the cake.
So, you know, while we've been interviewing fishermen around the Upper Gulf, there have been several individuals that haven't been paid anything. So these people are not on that list. But you say that the government is unaware of how many people, but surely these unpaid fishermen have contacted them saying, hey, I'm a fisherman, I haven't been paid. So what is, something's being lost here. What's happening there?
Yeah, because the fishermen leaders are doing this, the list. So they have the power to erase and to add more people. So a lot of people that is involved with the fisheries are not getting money, and there are people that are in on the list that they don't fish. So that's unfair.
Okay, so let me ask you this: we're just going to cut to the chase. Is it a level of corruption that's happening here, as far as? So much money is being issued to individuals that is questionable, and this money that's allotted for actual fishermen that are not allowed to fish, many of them are just completely invisible and receive no payment. Like, what is that? To me, if there is a disconnect and somebody's making that much money and somebody's making absolutely nothing, that to me screams corruption on some level and not just a mistake.
Yeah, of course, could be. Everyone knows that there's corruption, of course, in the Upper Gulf, and with that amount of money, so it's really easy for this to happen. I mean, I'm receiving ₱1,000,000 a month, so you can do a lot of things with that kind of money, of course, and also because it's a process that lacks transparency, because once the money, it is on the fishermen account, so we don't know exactly if they distribute the money well. So we don't know how they got their fishing permits, why they have a lot of permits, who are representing, if they have relatives on the list or not. So this, because there's a lot of money and there's a lot of people, this is happening.
So it's a possibility that they're not only adding additional members in their family that maybe don't fish, including their children and possibly even people that are deceased. They're just placeholders to receive money, and nobody questions it, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, nobody's digging name per name. I mean, who's going to look all the 2,700 people?
Well, are you? Is there going to be?
Yeah, we are in CBD. We're looking for the people that they are getting the most of the money. We're doing some research regarding that, but I think it's possible to do some research on 2,700 people, but we're doing it at the people that who's receiving a lot of money.
Okay, and let's break down these numbers real quick. So you said in your initial statement that there were 32 people receiving 42% of 32 million pesos. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so just so that people can understand, how much is 32 million pesos in dollars? Like, what is the rough estimate of what that would equate?
Yeah, we're talking about millions of dollars yearly, of course.
Okay.
And receiving a million pesos, it's unbelievable. That's a lot of money, so you can easily buy several apartments with that in that region, of course, or a house or a car each month, and easily.
And when you say that, okay, obviously we've established that's a lot of money and 32 individuals, I just want people to understand there's 2,700 people and there's 32 of those 2,700 people receiving 42%, which is just below 50%, just below half of the 32 million pesos.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to confuse people with all those numbers, but essentially there is a large group of people getting most of that money
and there's still people that have received, fishermen that have not received a dime.
Exactly, that's totally unfair. That's what's going on, and no one knew this information. They had the idea because they heard, but nobody took the time to dig into this and to have this this list. And also, they most of the fishermen also receive another aids. Like they also receive. They have a cheaper diesel, access to cheaper diesel to their boats. So they are saving a lot of money, no? And apparently they want to continue doing this because also it's the government fault because they have been doing giving a lot of compensations during the past years, not only this since this last fund started, but there were. There has been a lot more compensation programs in the past, so that's the way a lot of people has been surviving, and now they are very used to getting some a lot of money from the government, and of course they want to maintain the status quo of the situation because that's a better way that they will get benefits.
You know, I'm really interested in. And the people that are receiving this large sum of money, and obviously they might have two different reasons to make this decision, but I would be really interested to find out how many people that are receiving this large sum of money are still illegally fishing for Tetuaba because they can make even more money. For instance, looking at some of those arrest records and seeing those people, if they're on that list, where they're receiving money and why they made that decision. People that are not receiving money because, and although they should, I can understand why they would feel pressured to go fish illegally because they have nothing and then they're not being compensated. So, although we know that's still a choice of theirs and that's a legal activity, one person is more desperate, the other one is greedy. And I don't know, is that something that you're going to look into as far as comparing those arrests for the available.
Yeah, and actually there's people that they have been caught like as poachers, with Totoba bladders, and they are on the list. They are receiving compensation program. For example, this incident was in Gulf of Santa Clara with a policeman, between a policeman and a fisherman.
The double shooting.
Yeah. There were two members of that family that were on the list. Or they are in the list.
Because he was shot and killed by the police officer, uh-huh. And the police officer was also shot and killed.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So we have poachers on the list. Exactly. Even though they are receiving this money, they go out to fish illegally.
It seems like there's no sense of, I don't know, these communities are so small. I mean, you feel that when you go there. And I guess you would think in a small community you'd have a greater deal of camaraderie, but it doesn't feel like that when people are just taking money from the guys that they've been in the same town with the whole time, the same people that they fished around the whole time, but they want to take it all. They don't want to share the wealth. Actually, it's not even share. They don't want to share what is owed to those fishermen. I find that really mind-blowing. That it would be like that, and it seems to me if you live in such a small community that everybody would know who it was that would be doing this and why nothing's being done about it, because it's obvious everybody knows everybody. And when you know, oh wow, you got a new truck this month, you got a new house, is it again, that's just another indicator. And so it can nothing be done about this, you know, these co-op leaders, can they not represent the entire group instead of this favoritism towards some? What's that dynamic? What's happening there?
You're right. It's a small community, and everybody knows what the other person is doing. But I think this has scaled to a higher level because once organized crime is involved, so it becomes risky to tell on your neighbor, to tell on your friend, and to tell on your even your relative. So that's why a lot of people they don't even, as you know, they don't even want to talk in front of the camera, because they are afraid of telling what's going on. So this is now a risky business for them, and they just want to stay there, and it's sad because they want to stay there and be afraid of what could happen, but they are afraid, but they don't tell. So even though I say it's a small community, it's kind of sad that this is happening.
Well, I have to ask though, what, you know, if I've had so many people decline going on camera, even doing any kind of audio recording, I'm, you know, why are you doing this?
Because you
covered a lot of valuable information that definitely could lead to some opening up some doors, but you know, explain to me like why you're doing this now.
Because there's a lot of we are doing this because there's a lot of because we want to say the vaquita, and we are not afraid of saying what's going on, and we are not afraid of revealing some official documents and how the money is being distributed, and how and talking about the failures in the surveillance. So that is why, and we want to say the vaquita, and we will do whatever is necessary. And if we have the information, of course, we will make it public.
So I want to jump to. That's great. I commend you. I realize that I feel like you're going out on a limb, especially when I talk to the people that are afraid. I see it in their face, and they shy away. But when you deliver this news to Serba, and this meeting that we're at, the reaction, what was that reaction? These people have been embedded in this issue for a long time, and I'm actually quite amazed that they didn't already know this information. So, one, what was that reaction? And two, how do you think this information is going to affect their effort and their report, especially when they have to make recommendations to the environmental minister, Bakiyama?
Yeah, honestly, I was very surprised of the reaction of everybody. Everybody was shocked and impressed when we shared this information. And I had some comments after the meeting thanking me because they. I made their afternoon depressed, so it could we could feel like in the group like a very sad feeling, because this was happening. So everybody had an idea that like somebody was getting more money than others, but nobody knew about how much money is it's being paid. I think this is useful. Everybody should know about this, and I think this will be useful for Serba, maybe to make a recommendation to the Mexican government on the report that they are preparing. So this has to be taken into account to develop further compensation programs, and the government should really give a compensation to the fishermen committed to try a vaquita safe fishing year. So they have to change the way the money is being distributed. Not because you hold a lot of permits, you should be receiving a lot of money.
So what is your recommendation to kind of redefine exactly how this compensation program operates? Because obviously they're going to be looking at certain aspects of it from this standpoint. So you would be one of the best people to make that recommendation.
Yeah, of course the recommendation would be if the fisherman is committed and willing to try and has a fishing permit with a vaquita safe fishing gears, they could be compensated. But just as a temporary measure, as a rent out strategy, but not for a long term. Even though the ban should continue for more years, the government can't be paying a lot of money each year because some of the fishermen that they are getting used to receive a lot of money, so they adapt the fishing way to because of this. So I think fisheries could be profitable. They are profitable with vaquita safe fishing gears. So they just don't have to be greedy and easily. I think that they can receive a good amount of money to survive and to live really well in those fishing communities.
So another thing I wanted to ask real quick is, you know, we know that this is taxpayers' money that's being used. I wonder what the reaction of the taxpayers would be. One, do they know that their money is being used for a compensation program to support fishermen in an area that they know nothing they don't know what a vaquita is? And if they knew that it was just money that was not being equally distributed, in other words, they're taking money from a taxpayer, it's being ill-used, not really benefiting the real purpose of it, what would be their response? I mean, you think that somebody would be outraged. One, I don't want to be supporting somebody else. You need to find your money elsewhere. And then two, the money that you're taking, you're not even using it correctly.
Exactly. I know anyone that hears that, I mean,
Yeah,
exactly. We're paying for this. Yeah, that's why everybody has to know, and it's okay if people get angry because of this, because the money is not being used in a good way. Exactly. So,
where do you go to from now that this information is available and you're sharing with all these people? What are the next steps to kind of like make a positive change as we move forward?
Yeah, well, we're preparing a report. We're releasing a report with all this information next week, just after the CIRBA meeting, after the CIRBA report. And we have some other pieces of information. For example, something that I forgot to add is that when Profepa, they caught some poachers, they just present these people to the prosecutor. But after that, these people can easily get out. They get bailed or they stayed at jail for just a few hours. And this is also happening because the Profepa authorities, they have to file a formal suit to the general prosecutor, to the federal prosecutor, so they can start a research on what's going on. I mean, not only on the men that was caught, but only on all the traffic in the Upper Gulf. So far, and we know because we requested this information, there is no research that is covering all the Upper Gulf about the illegal totrava traffic. And Profepa actually just filed one formal suit from 2012 to 2015. In these years, they only filed this suit. So this is also a problem because people is getting caught and they get released, and the next day they go out to fish illegally again. So if they know this could happen, they only could be at jail just a few hours, so they are not afraid, so, and they will continue to fish illegally.
And then, I mean, as far as when you file a report like that, how long? We all know that legal systems, they take forever. So what does filing a report really mean?
Filing a suit. I mean, if they, if they filed a suit since the beginning of this administration, for example, so far we'll have some good information. I mean, the government could have some good information to disassemble all the organized crime in the Upper Gulf. So if I know it could take time, but it will take longer if they don't file anything.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. You've contributed quite a bit to our film thus far, and I hope that we obviously stay in communication.
So thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. And very glad to share this information.
All right. That was our conversation with Alex Oliveira from the Center for Biological Diversity. As much as we hate presenting doom and gloom stories here on the podcast, Alex's findings are extremely important when considering a path forward for vaquita conservation efforts. The good news is that there is now a completely different branch of the Mexican government in charge of administering the compensation funds that were discussed in this episode, so we are hopeful that this program will be dramatically improved in the coming months. It is difficult to ignore Alex's discussion about the penalties associated with being caught fishing illegally for Tetuaba. As long as the penalty remains negligible and the reward for catching Tetuaba remains extremely high, fishermen will continue fishing for Tetuaba with gillnets, and the vaquita population will continue to decline. We talk a lot about the importance of good enforcement of Mexico's gillnet ban, but this enforcement is meaningless if the penalty remains insignificant. To learn more about Alex's important research related to vaquita conservation, you could head over to the show notes page for this episode, where we'll have links to his recent report and other vaquita-related work being done by the Center for Biological Diversity. Those show notes can be found at wildlensinc.org/EOC70. This episode was produced by myself, your host, Matt Podolsky, along with Wild Lens producer, Sean Bogle. Our theme music is by The Humidors.